you. I'm Danny Boggs. I am currently a judge on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. I served for 3 years in the Reagan White House Office of Policy Development under the aegis of Ed Meese. And in 1986, I was appointed to the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals on the recommendation of Ed Meese and the Justice Department. So I was particularly happy to participate in this celebration of Ed Meese's contributions to federalism and the country. Our topic of federalism, to me, is a procedure, not necessarily an outcome. The spheres of state and national powers are set out in the Constitution, and they do overlap, and necessarily so. As Madison said, interest is opposed to interest. The power of one can limit or alter the power of the other, and the sphere of liberty may predominate or advance first in one area or another time in another. The founders themselves had enormous experience in state government before they were in national government and afterwards. George Washington and the Burgesses, Jefferson as governor of Virginia, Madison as a delegate to the Virginia Constitutional Convention 40 years after he had been a leader at the U.S. Constitutional Convention. And perhaps most interesting, the interplay, you may know Madison and Monroe contended against each other for the favor of the Virginia voters in the first Congress in a district that had been gerrymandered by Patrick Henry in the Virginia legislature. So they knew this interrelation intimately. To the extent that states are free to have their own policies, these may be policies that we agree with or not. As an example, when South Dakota loosened its banking laws, some of you may remember we were suddenly all sending our credit card payments to Sioux Falls, but they were able to mollify and ameliorate harsh federal regulations. But when Arkansas had its severe usury laws limiting interest rates were low, but few loans could be made to the people in Arkansas. Both states were examples of federalism in practice, but only one was actually good policy. Similarly, I attended a very enlightening debate a couple of years ago on federal criminalization with Ed Meese and a very liberal, radical writer, Nat Hentoff, on one side, and Joe DeGeneva, a well-known conservative federal prosecutor, paired with one of Nader's raiders on the other side, favoring a more vigorous federal criminal presence. Now, I think correctly, Ed Meese favored the consistent and principled limitation on federal criminal role, even if it meant that both laws that one did not like and those that one did like might be less well enforced. I analogize this dual aspect to my role as a judge on the concept of judicial restraint. As a judge for 26 years, I sometimes have had sympathetic law students think and say to me that, well, judicial restraint means not acting at all, or acting only when it's an action for a policy that you approve of. I disagree. When the Constitution, constitutional statutes, and the common law require judicial action, a judge must act. But judicial restraint is rather that you are acting only by the law, restraining yourself from acting by your will alone. In fact, the only time you can really be sure that you are exercising that restraint is when you don't really like the policy outcome of your decision. If your decision and your desire are in harmony, you may be fooling yourself as to which you are following, but if you don't really like the outcome, you can be sure you are at least exercising your best legal judgment, not the will that Hamilton said the judiciary should not have. And in a similar way, federalism as a framework may not always lead to policy outcomes we would favor. Heather Gerken, a liberal Yale law professor, has written provocatively of, quote, progressive federalism using states and local control to promote liberal policies at odds with a national consensus to the contrary. And of course, as our previous speakers indicated, it was the early 20th century progressives who spoke of the states as little laboratories of democracy, but meaning really only as laboratories of liberal reform. I raise these cautions not to denigrate federalism, but to emphasize that its real-world outcome may depend on how it is practiced in practice, which brings us to today's topic, federalism in practice, health, education, welfare, and justice. We have three fascinating speakers from a wide variety of perspectives on how they have been involved in making federalism work best in practice. Each will speak for 15 to 18 minutes. I have been authorized to be more vigorous in enforcing this than some of the TV debate moderators you may have seen, in order to leave ample time for questions. I have also been authorized to be vigorous in limiting questioners to short and pithy actual questions. The three speakers, we will first have Arlene Wolgemuth, who is Executive Director of the Texas Public Policy Foundation and Director of the Foundation's Center for Healthcare Policy. She served for 10 years as a Texas state representative. She was chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Health and Human Services and a member of the Select Committee on Healthcare Expenditures. She's also served as president of the Texas Conservative Coalition, and I was fascinated that she was twice named to Texas Monthly Magazine's 10 Best Legislators list, which, if you know the quite liberal bent of Texas Monthly, is quite an achievement. Our second speaker will be Dr. Richard Brake, the Director of Education at the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, ISI, well known to most of us for its mission to educate for liberty. Before his current position, he directed the Institute's Civic Literacy Program, which has documented the failure of America's top universities to succeed at teaching their students the founding history, texts, and institution of our constitutional republic. He has also taught American politics and constitutional law at several universities. Earlier in his career, he worked at Experience Practical Federalism as a legislative assistant in both the Pennsylvania House of Representatives and the United States House of Representatives, and serves on his local school board, as I think he is going to talk about. Our third speaker, Dr. Gregory Sathoff, is a medical doctor. He is the executive director of the Critical Incident Analysis Group, a group on whose advisory board Ed Meese also serves. Dr. Sathoff has a joint appointment at the University of Virginia in the Department of Health Sciences and the Department of Emergency Medicine. He has served in the Army Reserve Medical Corps, being deployed during the first Gulf War. In particular, he has served as a resolution conflict specialist for the FBI's Critical Incident Response Group, has testified before numerous bodies on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, school shootings, anthrax, and other poisoning and biological incidents. I think our three speakers will give us a fascinating variety of perspectives on practical federalism, and we'll start with Ms. Wolgemuth.